You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, November 5th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live amidst the wreckage of the midterm election for Democrats across the country in 2014. On the program today, bloodbath. Democrats lose the Senate. Democrats lose expected wins in, or hoped wins in, governor races across the country, but for one. Good news is a lot of progressive referendums, almost, oddly, a clean sweep on every major referendum that you would want to see passed across the states. Bring you exit polls, we'll take your phone calls, all that and more today as we preview the coming couple of years, which I think are going to be bleak, folks. Not even bleak. They're going to be rather angering to you. I know last night, just watching the late at night, just watching MSNBC, I was getting annoyed already. I was already getting annoyed. The notion that somehow now we're Republicans are gonna have to govern. Just stunning. We'll get to that. I don't want to get ahead of myself. Obviously, a little bit tired. I was up until 2 in the morning watching the results and tweeting at people. And people get a little bit unreasonable at 1:30 in the morning when they're tweeting on a night like last night in particular. Just a little bit. We're going to take your phone calls early today if we get any at 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is, of course, the number. Probably won't get to your IMs until a little later in the program, but I'm interested in hearing if people have any response from the states they were in. Obviously, the polling was not correct in many respects. Maybe broadly speaking it was, but it certainly overestimated the Democratic chances last night, not just in maintaining the Senate, which I think as of last week we sort of thought was definitely in jeopardy, but in particular in governor races across the country. So let's get first to the Senate results. As it stands now, Republicans will control the Senate. As it stands now, they have 52 Republican senators. There are 42 Democratic senators. There are two independent senators, Bernie Sanders, who will always caucus with the Democrats over Republicans, and Angus King from Maine, who may, in fact, end up caucusing with Republicans. And there are three races extant. Alaska has not been called yet, but it appears Dan Sullivan, the Republican challenger to Mark Begich, will win, which will increase the Republican majority to 53. Louisiana is going to a runoff. Bill Cassidy up by 1 point over Mary Landrieu. That runoff will happen in about a month, and likely Mary Landrieu will lose. However, one never knows with her. In Virginia, the race has not been, as far as I know, officially called for Mark Warner, but it appears that he has prevailed in what was a completely unexpected close race. So what you are probably looking at is a 53 or 54 to 43 or 44 Republican majority with two independents, which could split. Bernie Sanders caucusing with the Democrats, bringing them to 44 or 45. Angus King caucusing with the Republicans, bringing them to 55 or 54. We won't know, but largely that is academic. Then there's been some question as to whether or not Joe Manchin would caucus with the Republicans. His spokesman has said that's not going to happen. That's something you would be more likely to see if it was more evenly divided. In other words, if Joe Manchin could actually bring some real value to the Republican caucus and extract some value for his caucusing with them. So let's go over these Senate results, at least the ones that we had previewed. In Alaska, like I said, not called yet. But Dan Sullivan appears to be the winner. We won't know possibly for another week or two. Alaska is a big and remote state, or I should say there are remote places within Alaska. So it takes a while to count these ballots. It's still relatively close. In Colorado, Mark Udall got slammed. Democratic turnout there was abysmally low, particularly amongst even women. Cory Gardner wins in Colorado. Mark Udall probably hurt by President Obama's delay on his executive action in terms of immigration reform. Apparently, he was the only one who wanted the president to go forward with that. In Louisiana, in North Carolina, in Arkansas, those Senate Democrats were hoping that the president would hold off. I'm not sure that would have made a difference in the final analysis. What we lose there, aside from, of course, the control of the Senate, and we've talked in the past a little bit about the implications of that, and we'll talk more about it later in the program, but specifically with Mark Udall, we lose really one of only two genuine, at least in the context of the Senate, let's say. I want to put an asterisk next to that. But leaders or fighters, allies in dealing with the overreach of the national security state. Udall and Ron Wyden have been the most vocal opponents and greatest allies of those outside of elected politics who want to reform the NSA. In Georgia, David Perdue walked away with it. We anticipated at least a runoff. There will be no runoff in Georgia. Nearly 53% victory over Michelle Nunn. Like I said, in Louisiana, it's going to a runoff. Bill Cassidy only got 42% of the vote. He needed 50 to avoid a runoff. Mary Landrieu got 41% of the vote. There was a third Republican essentially running in that race, I believe. And so highly unlikely that Mary Landrieu can persevere. We won't see the the massive amounts of money poured into that race, I would imagine. Although I would imagine you'll see Republicans probably outspend Democrats in that race. In Iowa, Joni Ernst really crushed Bruce Braley. Destroyed him. 52% to 43%. Joni Ernst, it remains to be seen if she will let her freak flag fly in the Senate. But I will say that she has a very bizarre habit of laughing after almost everything she says. Now, maybe she was just very happy last night.
She's a funny person.
She's a very funny person,
she
acknowledges her own hilarity,
Wanted to repeal the New Deal and send us back to Puritan times or workshop material with Sarah Silverman.
That's right.
Yeah. Those are her two paths. It is interesting. She's never said anything funny, and she does always laugh. Really
there is
hard.
A nervous laughter afterwards.
It wasn't just in the speech last night. It's happened a lot of other times.
Okay.
I would imagine if there was sound to that Ebola thing, she was laughing pretty hard when she was talking to Charlie.
So Joni Ernst will be in the Senate from Iowa. Now, of course, Iowa, one of those purple states. Colorado, one of those increasingly blue states. You know, Georgia, Louisiana, Alaska, Kentucky, where Mitch McConnell also destroyed Allison London and Grimes. That's not terribly surprising. These were uphill battles. Iowa and Colorado, those were key races where Democrats needed to win, obviously. In New Hampshire, the one race that really put a smile on my face last night and would have been extremely hard, particularly for this program to live down. Gene Shaheen defeated Scott Brown nearly 52 to 48%. And Scott Brown making history, having been the first person in the nation's history to lose two Senate races to two different women in two different states.
The irony abounds, brah. But, like, seriously? I mean, like...
What do you mean, the irony abounds?
I don't know, dude. That was weird. It was like I just sounded queer for a second, like something else took over my body. But, you know, I got some friends. You know, King called me up yesterday, told me to feel better. Queen was on the line, obviously. You know, these are my friends from my other days of being in the Senate.
Kings and queens.
Kings and queens. They felt bad. There was a duke, too, a duchess. So there was a lot of calls like that. And, you know, go to Mass, go to Rhode Island. Whatever. I might even freaking run for president.
Dude, there's no problem. Massachusetts 2.0. That's what I'm saying. Everybody's expecting me to go to a third state. No, I'm just going to keep going Massachusetts, New Hampshire. Massachusetts, New Hampshire. I'm just going to go. I'm doing the 128.
I'm ready to run against
128 road.
I'm ready to run against the
I'm just going right across the border every time. That way I don't have to meet new people. This way I go back to Massachusetts. Hey, look who's back. And then I go back to New Hampshire. Look who's back again. I could do this forever.
Familiarity breeds liking and stuff. The question is, why didn't I run for governor? And the answer to that question is...
too much work.
That's like an actual job.
If I really want to get a real job, I'll go get a real job. I'm not going to do one for like... Dude, I was getting paid a couple hundred thousand dollars for sitting on a board of a company that didn't even exist.
It was pretty
awesome.
I'm going
to go and work? You got to stay late at the office if you're a governor, right? You got to be on call. Senator, you can just sort of hang out. You say a couple of words. You take a trip.
You get some campaign contributions. You meet a queen. It's awesome. But, you know, like on that board, they would say like...
Governor, what am I going to do? Shovel potholes or go work for the DPW?
Yeah.
Give me a break. All right, let's...
I just have to do one last one.
I'm begging him. Begging him to run again.
Working on the board because they would come in and I'd be like, oh, guys, is this like strictly speaking, first of all, does this company exist? And they'd be like, yeah. And then I'd be like, does what you're doing fit within legal confines or whatever? And they'd be like, totally. And then I'd be like, awesome. Meeting adjourned. Check cleared. That was an awesome job.
Oh, God. I don't know what we're gonna do if he doesn't run for another office. Dude,
I mean, like the next Catherine Harris thing.
The only thing I could hope
people be like, "Who the hell is that?"
Right? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. All right. So in North Carolina, this one is also heartbreaking. Tom Tillis beats Kay Hagan by a percentage and a half, just not enough. I mean, the story across the board is basically the structural one. Democrats just did not get their base out. In South Dakota, Mike Rounds handily defeated Rick Wyland and Larry Pressler. And like I said, in Virginia, Mark Warner, it appears, has just eked by Ed Gillespie.
Ed Gillespie is one of the most sleazy people in American politics, not even as a Republican. I mean, he's an operative and a lobbyist. And I guess the only answer to that is Virginia's Democratic governor is a fundraiser.
Right.
I mean, I don't know where they, like, find these candidates. It's atrocious.
Well, you know, remember that, you know, 2008 was a wave election for the Democrats. You're going to see these type of losses. Again, it was in Virginia. It was a turnout issue. This turnout was just shockingly low, but people were very much surprised by how close that race was. I mean, it was on nobody's radar, nobody's.
And isn't Warner the type of guy who has, I mean, less so recently, but he's always like the kind of media interest and conversation about him relative to actual excitement about him by actual people who vote. Isn't he one of those like classic disproportionate cases?
He is about as close to no labels as you can be and still be a Democratic or a right. Republican senator. The bottom line, though, is and that raises the question of, you know, what will be the message that the Democratic Party takes away from this? I don't even know that there is a monolith that one could say the Democratic Party, but Al Franken won his election 53% to 42%. Oh. And so that's a decisive victory for Al Franken. Decisive. And my hope is that we will see Al Franken become a national leader who will be out there. He has been studiously avoiding national media. Does a lot of Minnesota media, avoids national media. In fact, I believe that it's possible that the first and one of the few, I know he's given a few, national interviews or national programs was one that I did with him on Ring of Fire Radio and the Majority Report. I think we did it live. I'm not sure that we did it live on the Majority Report from Netroots. Now, granted, it was in Minnesota at the time, but nevertheless, but it's clear that Democratic voters are not going to come out and vote for nothing. And 7 months ago, 8 months ago, I know as early as March, I was saying the Democrats need something to run on beyond this stuff. And my idea at the time was the expansion of Social Security does not appear to have been enough to help in Alaska.
But we did hear from that guy in Alaska who actually said that on the ground in Alaska, that message wasn't even being pushed that hard.
Right.
Anyway, I mean, it is kind of fascinating because I think in a certain sense it doesn't totally matter. You have to try to capitalize it and say that if you ran a more unabashedly progressive campaign, it would have done better because you would have turned out people and you would have mobilized the base, and that was a huge problem. But it is striking that this wasn't even like a third way Simpson Bowles. It was nothing. It was just nothing.
There was no national agenda.
I'm not that like Obama. And actually, it was the same way Republicans, just in the reverse. If a Republican ran a race a couple years that said nothing and just, I'm anti-marriage equality, that's it. And obviously, it's much better to be pro-marriage equality and pro-women's rights. But besides that, I mean, I think that was the only thing nationally that Democrats talked about across the board was protecting reproductive access, which is really important. But
And the minimum wage. The fascinating thing is that the minimum wage passed, and we'll get to the referendum, did very well. I think it swept, but it just did not have the coattails. It just was not associated enough with Democrats, which is... You know, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, because they didn't – there wasn't any
– It doesn't fit a broader narrative. I mean, look,
exactly.
At the end of the day, the bottom line is that the economy is still in the crapper for most people. I think Nikki asked me at like one point, she had read somewhere like what – she read off some I don't know if it was a tweet or something that she had seen like – unemployment below 6% or close, gas under $3 a gallon, stock market through the roof. And she said, like, why isn't this translating? And I'm like, well, A, you have long-term unemployment. You have people who have left and wages have been stagnant. People still feel incredible financial insecurity. So it doesn't matter what the number is on the unemployment. $3 gas has only been around for a couple of weeks, and people can hardly notice because of the broader insecurity that they're facing. And a tiny percentage, relatively speaking, of the country has money in the stock market. And so this doesn't animate three-quarters or two-thirds of the electorate.
And then doesn't that put – because besides talking about minimum wage – That is another situation where Republicans could sort of run to the left because Democrats had to brag about an economic record actually felt. And then Republicans, while campaigning on things that will make everything worse, could say, hey, those numbers don't tell the whole story.
Sometimes it's just a matter of citing the problem and acknowledging the problem. You know,
and saying
Obama,
those numbers don't tell the story.
In Iowa of 2008 or 2007, I guess it was, Obama started pulling away when he started referring to Social Security, and I didn't at the time. I was I still don't like this type of language, but it was effective for him, referring to a Social Security as being in crisis. Now, he stopped as he went on, but that motivated older voters in Iowa to vote for him. Because the implication is, I've got a solution for it when you name a problem.
Right.
Right.
Exit polls pointed to an electorate that very much looked like 2010. Young, non-white electorate largely stayed home. The working class vote, according to Ed Kilgore, I believe it was, defined as voters making less than $50,000 a year, which is a crucial demographic for Democrats, was only 30% of the electorate, which is similar to 2010 when it was 36%. Those voters favored Democrats by a 14-point margin. Party generally wins when that margin approaches 20 points. So, again, you need more of those voters. They have failed to energize those people, the populist message. I mean, it's,
I kind
something
of,
that we just say on this program constantly, but that's basically the reality.
I was remembering that, there were a lot of anecdotes like this in 2008, and I'm sure some of them were made up, but some of them were probably true, where like somebody's canvassing somewhere in Indiana or Pennsylvania or something, and they'll say, who are you voting for? And the voter would say, in a kind of mind-blowingly racist way, I'm voting for Obama. As in, like, the classic example was, I'm voting for the N-word candidate, right? And the whole, what everybody seemed to miss was that the reason that was happening was because somehow even that person was convinced that even though I am comfortable enough to use that word and racist enough to use that word with somebody I don't even know, that this guy's going to do something about my economic state.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do something about trade or, rebuilding job opportunity. And, if that doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. And so what's the incentive?
We also saw black and Latino percentage for Republicans went up by a couple of points, sort of reverting back to back to 2010, to non-presidential election year. The question is, in 2016, will the Democratic candidate be able to get the numbers that Obama did with black and Latino voters? Remains to be seen, but let's not get there yet. Let's go to the governor races. This is where, frankly, things got far more disturbing. Mm. Rick Scott, a guy who just has had a dismal record in Florida, just dismal. Beat Charlie Crist, not the world's greatest candidate, but a guy who recognized things like climate change, guy who recognized things like voting rights, guy who would have, at the very least, attempted via executive order or created a situation where there'd be more pressure to expand Medicaid for hundreds of thousands of people in Florida. Hundreds of thousands. He lost by over one percentage point, 47, Scott over Crist. In Maine, where you also specifically had 70,000 people denied Medicaid health insurance coverage, will continue to go without that coverage. Because Paul LePage got about 48%. Mike Michaud got about 44%. And Elliot Cutler, the independent who a week ago came out and said, sort of, I'm still running, but it's clear to me Michaud has a much better chance than I do. So if you want to vote for him, go ahead. As opposed to being to full-throatedly coming out and saying, vote for Michaud, so that we do not have Paul LePage here again. Garnered 8.5%. So Maine will continue to have a lack of Medicaid. Exit polls show that had Cutler dropped out of the race, LePage and Michaud would have been at a 47-47 dead heat, more or less, 48-48. I hope that guy, Elliot Cutler, feels good about himself. In Massachusetts, or I should say Wisconsin, Scott Walker easily defeats Mary Burke. Also a disturbing outcome. Thus begins Scott Walker's 2016 campaign for the presidency. He wins 55% to Mary Burke's 46.5%. Those are races where we anticipated the Republican would lose or could lose and didn't. In Pennsylvania, the one bright spot, Tom Wolf handily defeats Tom Corbett. So that's somewhat encouraging. In Massachusetts, Charlie Barker beats Martha Coakley. Are we going to have her run again now? Maybe she could move up to New Hampshire. Maybe she could move up to Maine and challenge Susan Collins. Man, she is a horrible candidate. In Maryland, also a pretty big upset. Larry Hogan defeats Anthony Brown. Anthony Brown was the lieutenant governor under O'Malley. This is going to hurt O'Malley's 2016 bid as well, frankly. In Illinois, Bruce Rauner beat Pat Quinn 50-45, essentially. Just across the board, Republicans beat the Democrats. In New York State, the outcome's not terribly surprising. However, the vote was at least encouraging. This came out basically exactly as I was hoping. Well, I guess in retrospect, it would have been great if Andrew Cuomo was not even on the ballot. But despite that, the Working Families Party ended up getting 114,000 votes for Andrew Cuomo on that ticket. Howie Hawkins, running on the Green Party ticket, almost 5%, got 166,000 votes. So the Green Party gets on the ballot. The Working Families Party stays on the ballot. In my estimation, I was hoping that the Working Families Party would get 50,001 votes so that they would also get the message. But that's a good, that's a great outcome in my, from my perspective. Andrew Cuomo – gets a total, I guess it is, of about 50% of the vote, 52% of the vote, which is great. Keeping him under 60% was always a big goal. And Rob Astorino gets about 40% of the vote. So 8% of the vote chewed up. Five of that coming from the Green Party. So it was quite good. Andrew Cuomo was denied his career, at least as a national jerk, is over. Still will be in New York.
Who do you hate more, Joe Lieberman or Andrew Cuomo? I'm really curious, given your particular antipathies and history. Setting aside,
I gotta say Joe Lieberman.
Okay,
I gotta say Joe Lieberman.
Lieberman, all right. No one's gonna touch Lieberman.
No. Referendums, a much better outcome for progressives. Minimum wage in Alaska, raising the minimum wage from $7.75 to $9.75 wins with 67% of the vote. In Arkansas, minimum wage from $6.25 to $8.50. Now understand that the current federal minimum wage is actually higher than their state wage. Wins with 65% of the vote. California raises its minimum wage. In San Francisco, I should say in cities in California, San Francisco goes up. Illinois, minimum wage goes from $8.25 to $10 by 62%. In Nebraska, from $7.25 to $9, yes, at 59%. South Dakota to $8.50, yes, 53%. Paid sick leave happens in Oakland, I think it is. They pick up, increases the California state sick paid leave. In Massachusetts, yes. Personhood fails in Colorado, where unborn human beings are not going to be considered persons. North Dakota, the Constitution right, the constitutional amendment of personhood also loses. In Tennessee, it loses. In Alaska, decriminalization of small amounts of cannabis passes. California reduces sentences for nonviolent drug charges passes. D.C. legalized marijuana passes. Florida, its medical marijuana referendum loses because it had to clear 60% threshold, still got 58% of the vote. In Oregon, full-on legalization with a regulatory structure passes. So all of these ballot measures, which we anticipated would help, particularly those minimum wage things, passed but didn't necessarily help the Democrats. Santa Barbara County voters voted on whether or not to ban fracking. Yes, passed. In Texas, Denton passed their – we spoke to that Denton activist some time ago. Their attempt to ban fracking within the city of Denton passes. So across the board, these referendums came out quite well. Some of the most, I guess, prominent ones. We're going to take a break. We're going to head into the funner half of the program. We'll go over some sound that we have from last night. We'll take your phone calls. Oh, let's take a quick phone call in this.
Give them a little taste.
Yeah.
I needed to have a lot of male vitality last night to keep watching this.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
One of our listeners wants to send us some.
Colin from an 847 area code. Who's this? 847 area code. Who's this? Well, let me try hooking up. Maybe that's a problem with our phone system. 646-257-3920.
Enjoying your taste, folks.
Yeah.
This is what it's all like in the fun half.
We still have, obviously, our setting up our tech situation here. Things are a little disjointed.
Yeah, but I'm still every day impressed by how quickly and efficiently we've done this.
It's pretty crazy. I think that person hung up on us. So let's go to the... Oh, that's the problem.
Ah, so we got this going.
Okay, we got the person there. Yeah, no, it's working. It's just that, you know, so much of doing daily radio is habitual. And so if something's misplaced, then in a new area, I'm not following the same routine. So we'll pick up this call. I want to just tell you people, I see you're calling from an 847 area code. Just hang on. We'll be with you in just a moment. Tomorrow we will be taking a tech day. So I think we'll try and get something up for members. But for the you freebies, we will be back on Friday. Remember, it is your support that makes this program possible. If you can become a member, become one today at majority.fm. We're trying to get our act together. Hopefully we're going to set up an Indiegogo account tomorrow to do a fundraiser, which we will start in the coming days so that we can raise money for a number of things that we need, ranging from equipment to a legitimate video set to video equipment to some sound barriers so that we can make this place sound good. If anybody has any used drum shields that they want to talk about, to send an email to us at Majority Reporters. But the best way for you to make sure that this show is able to continue on a daily basis is to become a member today at majority.fm. Also, if you use Amazon, you can give us go to majorityreportkickback.com, click on the link. Always buy your crap from Amazon through that link. We get a kickback. You notice no difference, but we get a kickback. So if you buy crap from Amazon, the least you can do is skim some money off of Jeff Bezos' bottom line by sending it to us.
Let us wet our beaks.
Yeah. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee to your chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. All right, let's go to the phones. You call them from an 847 area code. Who's this?
Charles from Evanston. Can you hear me?
Charles? Sure. Yeah. How you doing? Where are you calling from?
Evanston, Illinois.
Okay. What happened?
So, I don't freaking know. He was down early. He was up middle. And then he's down another 5 points. It's the stupid hayseeds from downstate. And it's the selfish rich pricks in the collar counties. I don't know why the hell they're blaming Quinn. A lot of people didn't like Quinn. I found him very endearing. I found him very sincere. Maybe slightly goofy, but not stupid goofy. Mm. And Illinois has a horrible underfunded pension. And it's not his freaking fault.
Right.
Before him, it was Blagojevich, who was a boob. And before that, it was a bunch of Republicans. And I don't know how they think anyone thinks Rauner is going to fix it. So this is what I'm waiting for. Because I met Quinn last year, and I said, fracking poisons the groundwater. And he says, you know, we have the science looking in on it, and we're going to get the scientific consensus next year. I thought, well, I was satisfied at the time. So Rauner, I don't think he's going to, I don't know. We'll have to see. The other thing I'm looking for is, I imagine Alex is still around, and they've probably been waiting for Illinois to send all their memos to the state senate, which is, I assume, still democratically controlled, but now they have a Republican governor.
Right.
So that's what I have to say. I'm very annoyed. And mostly I agree with everything you say, so it's always a pleasure listening. And I do hope that Obama and or Reid has a little nerve.
And maybe Reid, but I don't even know if that's going to happen. We're going to talk about what to expect next, but I appreciate the call.
Dude, could I ask you a question?
Please.
Are there any like girls or anything running for anything in Illinois? Or like what's the terrain like there?
I'm sorry, what was the first part?
Are there any like girls running in Illinois? Anything like what's the terrain like there?
Scotty B's talking to you right
now. Dude.
there aren't a lot on the there's Sheila Simon. I don't know if she won the state comptroller.
Oh no, I'm not talking that sounds like a job. We're talking Senate. Kings and queens, duchesses and dukes, because everybody's expecting me to go to another New England state, and I'm like, frick it, I'll go to Middle America, boom, right there, I'll take them out.
You know, kind of like New York, Illinois has had a bunch of carpetbaggers.
Well,
they haven't won, but...
Well, I literally don't know...
You know, the best thing about going to Illinois is that it's like when a British person... comes to this country and everybody's like, I like you because you got a British accent.
What an accent
but
you
then
got.
I can go to Illinois and like people will be like, hey, you got a really cool accent. Are you from Great Britain or something like
and
that?
I'll be like, good well, day, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good on you,
yeah.
Illinois guy.
Yeah, I grew up in Connecticut myself.
Well,
so,
we
like
can
shrimp,
we can put a couple of shrimps on the Bobby. And we could just roast this thing up. All right. Thanks for the call, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care, sir.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to head into the fun half of the program, wherein we'll talk about just what a disaster I'm anticipating. I think President Obama is going to surprise a lot of people in the establishment, the liberal establishment, with just how craven he's going to become. I knock on this malamine, shaky table that is temporary, hoping to be wrong. But I just don't see this guy going willy-nilly on the vetoes. He's going to lay down very early, I think, that he's not going to stand for any repeal of Obamacare. And then that's going to be basically the smokescreen where all sorts of other stuff has no problem sneaking through. That's my guess. It's legacy time. How do you salvage a legacy? That's the way you got to think. And if you're President Obama, it would be irrational not for you not to look back on the Clinton, the second Clinton term, to figure that out. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this.